And here we are returning for part two of the season wrap-up of the TWBC podcast of the season that was 2021, being rejoined here by Alicia Bagnoli.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for having me again, Tony.
All right, then. And the man with the plan, as always, Vincent Stadelbauer.
Trying to have a plan.
Well, it was almost perfectly executed for the vast majority of the season. So, for what is it? Three events so far. Swiss Pro, Lake 38, King of Darkness. Now we fly across the Atlantic to Italy. Well, getting there was a challenge in itself, wasn't it? COVID tests, flights, transportation, accommodation. I mean, anything that we'd experienced before with the previous webcast so far this season, you just got to ratchet it up a little bit. And by ratchet, I mean climb up in the trees and all that kind of stuff as well.
I mean, that's what makes it definitely interesting. But I mean, if you just simply think about the complexity it takes to travel internationally during COVID as an individual, imagine what it takes to travel internationally during COVID as a webcast company that has four different nationalities with 30 bags, basically, I believe, what, 32 bags exactly, in a foreign country. I mean, it always adds a little bit. So, I mean, obviously, the COVID was already the first biggest step, the PCR test, make sure they time it, make sure everyone was going to come back negative, make sure everyone was fully vaccinated 2 weeks prior to takeoff. The rules kept changing at that time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, you just couldn't keep pace with it, could you?
No, you couldn't keep pace with it. The airlines would say one thing, the Italian government would say another thing, and the U.S. would say a third thing.
And then eventually you would arrive at the airport in Milan, you would show your passport and say, do you want to see all my other documentation? And the guy there just move along, please. Thank you. Next.
I mean, those things, it's becoming more and more like that, actually, when you travel. Even before COVID, the hardest is the check-in. The check-ins become the first already step. The time we had the hardest was at the check-in in Miami. That's where they checked really all our documents, and they made sure everyone was vaccinated, and they checked Matteo's letter, and we got to get all their bags in. And so it's always the check-in, it's always a little bit the hardest, because once you land in Italy, well, guess what? You're already in Italy. Talk your way through it, worst comes to worst.
And it was a good thing that you had the Delta not the Delta app, the United app as well, because you could actually check to see if the bags actually made it onto the plane. But you should have seen him on the plane looking through the windows on the outside, counting the bags, and actually holding up an international flight just to make sure that all of the black bags were on the flight.
Yeah, that was a stressful moment. That's a moment I don't wish anyone to be in. We flew, our flight was Miami
to Newark.
Yeah, Miami, Newark, and Newark, Milan. And we flew United all the way through. And it's nice with the United app, you see if your bags are on the plane or not. And we flew out of Miami and out of I believe it was 32 bags. Out of the 32 bags, 29 were on board and 3 were not on board. And I remember already making a big fuss about it. And they're like, no, we checked, they're on board. And then we landed in Newark. We went as individual through the gates, waited for a flight. Everything was on time. And I remember sitting in my seat. And luckily for me, I was right where they were at the loading belt of the plane, right there where they were loading the bags. And then I saw a trolley show up with all our stuff, and I counted them, and I could count 32 bags. So I'm like, oh, yeah, he's right. They actually all made it. And then they loaded 29 bags, and then the 3 that were remaining, they kept pointing at it. They kept talking. They kept pointing at it. And then they load them back in the trolley, and they drove them off the plane. And I'm like, well, we're still missing 3 bags. And at the same time, I mean, as you were right behind me, you saw at the same time, the captain's like, well, we're about to push off. We're going to Milan. It's going to be 9 hours and 30-minute flight, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, well, I'm missing 3 bags. So I stood up and I make a big fuss. And yeah, they held the plane for a solid probably was 10-15 minutes, but it felt like 30 minutes for me. Because, I mean, you don't want to be the guy holding down 350 passengers that's going to miss connections and whatever they got to attend in Italy.
Typical.
But there were actually a lot on our side. They went talking to the captain. I didn't see the captain at the beginning. And we waited another, I would say, 5 minutes. And then nothing happened. And then at some point, I asked again. She went bother the captain again. And then the captain came out of the cockpit with all his like medals and all his and all his thing on the jacket. I'm like, well, now it's the time he's gonna say, kid, why don't you go back and sit back and enjoy the flight? I'm like, well, now we're gonna take off. And the captain was actually super nice. He's like, I'm so sorry, your bags are not in. I understand that you need your bags. I explained them what we were doing. I'm on it. Your bags are actually not on the plane because they didn't clear TSA in Miami, which that was already very odd. If they didn't clear TSA in Miami, then why did they all even put in the plane in Miami?
Exactly.
Well, they did. But then when it got to Newark, they're like, well, we're not loading this bag on the plane. It didn't clear TSA. It hasn't been approved. We don't know what's in this bag. So they were actually going through TSA with those three bags. They were going through those bags and we're waiting for them to be done. And he said, I can't remember the time, but he said that this time it's the final cutoff. We got to push back whether those bags made it or not. And the bags literally made it back 2 minutes before the shutoff time. Load them up. We backed up the plane and we went.
Wow.
That was stressful. Remember? Oh my God. And obviously one of the bags that was stuck was the bag with all the cameras in. I remember one was a cable cam rope. Other one was like a tripod. And one was the camera bag. With freaking 8 cameras in it. I'm like, well, this one better make it, otherwise we don't have a webcam.
Exactly. Typical of Vince how to stop an international flight from leaving just to make sure that all of the bags are in.
Yeah, I mean, he will do anything. He was going to stop like literally everyone, every airport, every plane in the airport, just to make sure that he would have everything of his gear. So.
Now, you were in Italy at the time, Red. You'd actually flown ahead and gotten a few of the logistics situated with the truck and everything, you know, that allowed us to get the bags extracted from the airport.
Yeah, unfortunately, I missed all the trouble with Vince. So I flew home a little bit before that. I just wanted to go home a little early, see my family, and then get some training in. And let's say since it's my hometown, I kind of want to help them out with everything, with the lodging a little bit at some point and with the car, but I don't really have a big car at home. So they were like, well, I have a lot of gear, so it's not really going to fit in my car. So Vince tried to figure out what car was the best to really hold on to all his gear. And we got a truck,
We got a minivan, a work minivan.
A work minivan. Perfect. Basically they got it as soon as they landed. The minivan was right there. The crew hopped on it. They loaded up and then they went straight to San Gervasio.
Yep. And then getting to San Gervasio.
Straight to the restaurant.
Agroturismo Campagnoli. Huh?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's like the official restaurant of TWBC, I would say, because, I mean, we've eaten there on so many occasions, and there's always something great there, and it's always fresh, because an agroturismo in Italy, it means that all of the ingredients, all of the food was actually either farmed there, or grown there, or processed there.
So, yeah, they definitely know us, and every year they have the best food all the time.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. We'll get to that. We'll get to a situation a little bit later on that actually involved Vince and in a little bit of an emergency situation. But more pressing needs occurred at the beginning of the competition because we had to put the cable camera up, and it took a little bit more than your average effort to actually get the cable up and things. Even though we got the cable up, things that still were gremlins that still came into being.
Yeah, I'm happy that I'm laughing now, but I wasn't laughing when we were there. Luckily for us, and I mean for the sake of the cable cam, in Italy, we had Ricky Ward, which is one of our crew members, which used to be, before working for TWBC, he used to cut down trees for power line. So he's very experienced in cutting down trees. So first thing he did is already trim the whole site of San Gervasio in order for us to put the cable at the angle we needed. So that already took a solid one day. And we went and set it up, and that went pretty well. And I got the card going, and because it takes a little bit, we got the card going and all that. And we actually crashed it during the practice. We crashed it. So unfortunately, we weren't able to have the cable cam during the event because we set it up and then we crashed it. So that was very disappointing.
Yeah, it was. But I mean, it's with these kind of technologies, we've had to correspond with the company that actually produces the thing. You know, we did that at A King of Darkness. You know, I mean, it was a different time zone. Now we're in the same time zone. We were able to correspond with them a little bit more in the same time. But it's just one of those things, you know, and it's a learning experience always in this deal.
Yeah, so the cable cam, it's actually very well made. It's a Spanish company. They're called Noxon. The guy that kind of takes care of me over there, his name is Caesar, funny enough. And
hail Caesar.
Yeah, exactly. From Spain. and everything is good. It's just they're fairly new, and the problem we run always into is everything's so extreme with us. You know, we go so fast and we go so far, and it needs to run so fast and for 12 hours. So all that runs into a lot of issues. At the beginning, we had issues with range. Then we had, and we still have issues because of the speed, the traction wheel that makes the whole system move forward and backward ends up burning down because we go so fast and it heats up. So it always takes a little bit of a challenge, and it's still, I mean, every time I say it, everything that we bring new to the webcast that's fairly big, it takes a year to understand it and to have it perfect. I mean, the rope tension took a year. The water cam took a year.
Mm-hmm.
The trailer worked from day one, but it I'm still working on it now. It takes about a year to polish it. The cable cam, it's been a year, and we haven't made much progress, but we'll still tackle it. Maybe that one's going to take 2 years to figure out.
A lot of it is material science as well, because, because you were trying to do some stuff with the actual drive wheel. It was either too soft or too hard. It was either too abrasive or cut into the line a little bit, or that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's actually pretty amazing the stuff you learn by just running a webcast company.
The diameter of the rope is very important.
Yeah, you gotta be
a PhD.
Yeah, you gotta be a PhD in every field. I feel like 1 year it's a rubber, 1 year it's metal, 1 year it's cable,
carbon fiber.
It's an event.
Yep. So
I'll try my best.
So when the event got up and running, minus the cable cam, we were still able to push out something world class. You know, and there were some good world class performances there. I mean. But before we got to get to that, Adam was part of our crew this time as well, and skied in his very first competition. This despite the fact that he's an American, right?
Yeah,
first ever
funny.
Competition.
In Italy.
In Italy.
Was his first time in Italy, I believe. Not his first time in Europe. He's already spent some time in France. But it was his first time in Italy. First time doing a tournament. I think he had a good time. I think he's coming back.
I think he was in hog heaven because he's a bit of a foodie as well. He actually was involved in the restaurant trade in Chicago for a while. So he definitely appreciated Agroturismo Campagnoli very, very well indeed, Alice.
I know Adam. He always liked every kind of environment that is related to food. And I was just looking at his face when he was in Italy, and every time we were going out at a restaurant, he was just so happy. And he was just like so blessed. He was like having to have dinner with us with such a good food in such a good places. And it was so interesting for like he was just explaining all experience that he had with food. and places and agriculture places. So yeah, it was really nice to see him all excited about his tournament for the first time, and then all the new places he was gonna visit. It was a cool week.
And I mean, the event on itself was very interesting. I mean,
Thomas De Gasperi.
Thomas won, but that's, I mean, yeah, surprising on its own. Tigas always wins, I feel like. No, I mean, Tigas won, that's for sure. That was a big thing, especially in Italy. He won in Italy, so I mean, that's something always cool when the athlete wins in his own country.
Against a surprise package in Nicholas.
Against Nicolas Benatti, another Italian that skied very, very well, which kind of fizzled his way through the head-to-head format.
Skier of the day.
One skier of the day, full on deserves it. Chelsea Mills took the win, and
against Sam
took her first and only win of the year. But I mean, skied very, very well. I can't remember who got the Freddie couldn't ski. He pulled out in the middle of the head-to-head because his shoulder was hurting.
Notwithstanding the fact that his ski and equipment arrived late to start off
with. Yeah, Manon ski didn't make it, but made it by the time of the event. And then Freddie ski didn't make it. Then he managed to ski on it. And then his shoulder was hurting. He had a rough event now, looking back at it. No ski and shoulder being hurt. But that's part of the deal.
Speaking about rough events, after the event... I don't know what happened exactly, because I mean I tried to like just distance myself and let Alice do her thing, because you're hyper allergic to gluten.
Not that I knew anything really more, but yeah, that was the night before finals, right?
Yeah, so the night before finals, as Alice is going to explain, I had a little bit of a rough
time. Yeah, so
on Saturday night.
On Saturday night, we were done with the tournament. We wrap up for Saturday, and then we, as a crew, we just go out at night as a...
Well, we're still at the event Sunday. We were done, yeah.
We wrap up for Saturday. The day, but then we see like finals the next day, and we just go with the crew out at dinner at the Agriturismo that we were talking about before. Amazing food, but a little inconvenience happened. So Vince always asks about food allergies, like what's in the food and recipes and everything. I don't know what that night happened.
There was a little bit of a mix-up in dessert. They kind of gave the wrong dessert to the wrong guy. They gave my dessert to Adam, and they gave me Adam's dessert.
Yeah, the desserts were very similar.
From the outside, we had the same.
They look very similar.
I had strawberry with whipped cream, and he had strawberry panna cotta, which obviously panna cotta contains gluten. And they mixed up the dessert. And I mean, you know how drained and out of it we are after those
webcasts. And on top of it, from the outside, you don't really know how a dessert is made, especially just a cream. It can be made with whatever you can think of. And the dessert, we found out that it was actually full of flour, which is gluten. So honestly, it was... Vince and I got together about 5 years ago, and it was my first big allergy, like big one that I've assisted. I didn't really know what to do. Vince always knows what to do, but like in my case, I was just like trying to follow him. So we brought him back to the hotel, which luckily was just at the end of the lake, was like 2 minutes from the restaurant. And then, do you want to take it over? I'm not sure how to explain how you felt.
And then gluten took over. No, I mean, I don't react really well to it. I react extremely bad to it. I only took a spoon from it, but I mean, I knew it was going to be enough to react bad. And yeah, the full-on allergy we were actually, Matteo Luzzeri put us in some very nice apartments right down the lake, and he lives right on top of it. Mm-hmm. So I remember actually going to Matteo's apartment, because he had a little bit of a bigger bathroom, and when I have an allergy, you need a bit of setups. And yeah, I mean, the allergy took solid, like, whatever, like 3 hours. And yeah, I mean, it was pretty rough.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
I'm not going to get into details, otherwise people are not even going to listen to the podcast.
Luckily for
again,
me, though, there were a couple of other people in the apartment. Matteo was there.
Alicia was pretty freaked out.
Lorenzo was there. Alberto was there. Yeah, I mean, it was just really bad.
Yeah, I was there. I was there, but I mean, I wanted to, I wanted to clear the area a little bit. I mean, not that I wasn't concerned or anything like that, but I wanted to make sure that the people that knew how to deal with this had enough space to deal with it. You know, the last thing you need to be worrying about is me or what.
The only thing that really kept me pushing forward is that I didn't know how. He always feels some during an allergy, but Vince was like, even though I feel terrible, and yes, I feel like everything is bad right now, I know that this is the usual part. So then he was like, okay, now I'm going to do this step, and everything is going to be better. It just took a long time during the night. In general, the entire night was rough. He couldn't sleep much, but...
While I'm having a bad allergy, I can hear on the outside just absolute pouring rain. Your Amber was absolutely pouring. So actually the crew had to go back to the lake, even though we take care of our gear during the night, was pouring so much. I remember they went back to the lake, check on everything, so we were going to be able to run the next day. And I mean, the next day, Jesus, was a rough one, because I mean, I had barely sleep. I mean, after an allergy like that, you feel like you got hit by a truck the next day. It was a long day to pull through. We had a couple of these this year, but the Sunday of San Gervasio, for me personally, it's kind of the ones you gotta use the backup batteries to run through.
Absolutely. So, San Gervasio over and done with, and that was the one and only European event that we actually involved with. So the next event afterwards, after a few weekends of time away, was the Mamma Jamma, the U.S. Nationals up
the
in
Big Mama.
Yes, indeed. But the setup for that, so far as the logistical side, was a little bit of a challenge as well because of the events that were to come directly afterwards. I mean, from my personal perspective, I had to make sure that I drove my car to Santa Rosa Beach area because in about three events later, I would be back for the U17 World Championships. So, I mean, I drove my car there, got a ride to the airport, flew to Chicago, rendezvoused with the remainder of the crew who was already there. They drove in with their truck. They're waving, screaming, and shouting in the middle of O'Hare Airport. Hey, we're over here.
We are the most obnoxious people in the airport, hands down.
Yeah, and that replicated itself in Miami as well. But there you go. That's towards the end of the season. So, another event that reflects the intensity of the organizer who brought the event. And the organizers, two people who we know, Jeff and Roy Serde, along with the remainder of the crew there.
Yeah, so it was our second U.S. National. U.S. National, I said Big Mama because it's always like it's the biggest event in the world. 750 participants running two lakes. At Bennett's, they were running for 5 days. This time, they were running for 7 days. It starts at 7:30 a.m. And I mean, this event, we could do a podcast on its own, but I'm going to try to hit a little bit the main thing, as Tony mentioned.
Yeah, just the cliff note.
The logistic was immense, just to all get to Chicago and mostly be able to go out of Chicago, having two crew get out of Chicago to go on to the next events that we're going to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And then the gear, we had some gear getting delivered in Chicago, some gear shipping out of Chicago back home, some gear getting shipped to Seattle, some gear getting shipped to Santa Rosa.
Notwithstanding the fact that at the Nationals, it's two separate webcasts. It's, well, actually, it turns out to be three because there's the National Championships and then there's the Morley U.S. Open as well.
Yeah, so that on top of this added. So the way it's set up on our end at the U.S. National is two complete different webcasts, but that it's still run by basically the same crew. So the trailer runs normally on a normal basis. We have two computers and we have seven screens basically working together towards producing one webcast. And this time it takes a bit of rewiring in the whole trailer to have the trailer divided in two. And when I say divided in two, it is physically divided in two. There's a blue line across the whole trailer. And there is on one side of the trailer is Lake 1, and on the other side of the trailer it's Lake 2. And on top of this, we write down which disciplines are happening on the lake, because one stays slalom the whole week and the other one is trick and jump the whole week. Because you'd be surprised how confusing it gets when you got all those cameras, the announcer desk is divided in two. Each announcer are looking at their own TV. Each announcer is talking to their own mic. We try to divide it as much as possible to not make it confusing. And even sometimes I got to pause and I got to say, this camera is leg 1 or is leg 2? Where are we now?
Yeah, indeed. And also the other thing is, because we've got the trailer, officials can actually bring themselves in the trailer to actually officiate with the instant replay, which is something that is fairly new for this season.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that helps a lot in order to just make the whole tournament smoother. It is smarter to, the officials are still in the official tower looking at gate cameras and course and SherPad data, because that's obviously where the whole data comes in. But they're adding on top of this in our trailer to make sure that they do the accurate call, which that's definitely something that was already done a couple times beforehand, but definitely this year it's becoming almost, the tournament won't start until there's someone in the trailer. It's becoming now an actual official position.
All right then. So it was well executed. Obviously,
can we just talk about the tornadoes for 1 second? Go ahead, Tony. Yeah, explain about the weather in Chicago.
Yeah, the weather in Chicago. It's not called the Windy City for nothing. Really, I mean, it was just wow. The weather. I mean, we had like thunderstorms and like these big clouds forming in the middle of the afternoon and about to dump rain on us. So I mean, we had to like double trash bag everything. To make sure that
went back to the lake.
Yeah, exactly.
That was something, I mean, I gotta say, that was one of the time I'm like, wow, wind can actually pick you up and fly you off if it gets strong enough.
Yes, indeed. And I mean, there was one. I mean, with the Morley U.S. Open, which is a separate tournament, you know, we've got the night jump and everything. You know, that was the only real major setback that we had. We lost internet connectivity right at the very end between Doran Llewellyn and Freddie. But to your credit, you were rolling on that, which is the technical term in the industry for recording, and we were able to transmit that up and put it post event, which is still getting pretty darn good views even today.
Yeah, so the Morley U.S. Open is a tournament that happened. The U.S. National was running from Saturday to Saturday and the Friday, so the day before the last day, there is a pro event in the U.S. National, which was called the Morley U.S. Open, sponsored by Morley. Included slalom, trick, and jump, women and men.
Oh, and just to let clue us in on our listeners, Morley is actually a wedding dress design brand, and I do have to say, you were taking a look at those dresses very, very intently. You know,
who knows what?
Me too.
But carry on.
No, so the event was incredible. There were maybe, I don't know, 2,000 people at the lake. It was very, very busy. Went through the slalom perfect. We went through the trick perfect. We're very nervous about it, to be honest, because we knew already 3 months ahead that we're going to go into the US Open, which is the pro event, after 6 very, very long days. And we're going to get into it a bit vulnerable because the whole trailer is divided in half. So we had to go from a webcast to transition to another webcast without any interruption. So it was already a challenging leap a little bit. And then on top of this, we didn't really get lucky. We lost internet literally 2 skiers before the end of the event. Mm. But unfortunately, in what we do, as I say, every time it could actually somewhat, we could get a lucky break. Well, we don't get it. I guess it's why we have to learn to get better, because there's no luck in webcast.
But if you work hard enough, you make your own luck.
Yeah, I'm guessing we outwork it, definitely.
All right, then. So we went long on this episode, certainly, with Sanjay Varsio and the Nationals. We'll key in on some of our other events towards the end in the next episode, because you, Alice, were actually still in Italy during the time of the U.S. Nationals and were preparing to fly over stateside to do your first solo technical director role in the northwest of the United States. And we'll highlight that in the next episode of the TWBC podcast. And with that, we'll say cheerio for the moment, and we'll return with myself, Alice, and Vincent in the next episode.